Chapter 82. Too fast, Sam. Not too fast. Apostrophe, Mr. Winkle, stooping forward, with his body half doubled up, was being assisted over the ice by Mr. Weller, in a very singular and unswan-like manner, when Mr. Pickwick most innocently shouted from the opposite bank, Sam. Apostrophe, apostrophe, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here. I want you. Apostrophe, let go, sir, apostrophe, said Sam. Don't you hear the governor a callin'? Let go, sir. Apostrophe, with a violent effort, Mr. Weller disengaged himself from the grasp of the agonized Pickwickian, and, in so doing, administered a considerable impetus to the unhappy Mr. Winkle. With an accuracy which no degree of dexterity or practice could have ensured, that unfortunate gentleman bore swiftly down into the center of the reel, at the very moment when Mr. Bob Sawyer was performing a flourish of unparalleled beauty. Mr. Winkle struck wildly against him, and with a loud crash they both fell heavily down. Mr. Pickwick ran to the spot. Bob Sawyer had risen to his feet, but Mr. Winkle was far too wise to do anything of the kind, in skates. He was seated on the ice, making spasmodic efforts to smile, but anguish was depicted on every lineament of his countenance. Are you hurt? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Mr. Benjamin Allen, with great anxiety. Not much, apostrophe, said Mr. Winkle, rubbing his back very hard. I wish you'd let me bleed you, apostrophe, said Mr. Benjamin, with great eagerness. No, thank you, apostrophe, replied Mr. Winkle hurriedly. I really think you had better, apostrophe, said Allen. Thank you, apostrophe, replied Mr. Winkle, I'd rather not. Apostrophe, what do you think, Mr. Pickwick? Apostrophe, apostrophe, inquired Bob Sawyer. Mr. Pickwick was excited and indignant. He beckoned to Mr. Weller, and said in a stern voice, take his skates off. Apostrophe, no, but really I had scarcely begun, apostrophe, remonstrated Mr. Winkle. Take his skates off, apostrophe, repeated Mr. Pickwick firmly. The command was not to be resisted. Mr. Winkle allowed Sam to obey it, in silence. Lift him up, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Sam assisted him to rise. Mr. Pickwick retired a few paces apart from the bystanders, and, beckoning his friend to approach, fixed a searching look upon him, and uttered in a low, but distinct and emphatic tone, these remarkable words, you're a humbug, sir. Apostrophe a what? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Winkle, starting. A humbug, sir. I will speak plainer, if you wish it. An impostor, sir. Apostrophe, with those words, Mr. Pickwick turned slowly on his heel, and rejoined his friends. While Mr. Pickwick was delivering himself of the sentiment just recorded, Mr. Weller and the fat boy, having by their joint endeavors cut out a slide, were exercising themselves thereupon, in a very masterly and brilliant manner. Sam Weller, in particular, was displaying that beautiful feat of fancy sliding which is currently denominated knocking at the cobbler's door, apostrophe, and which is achieved by skimming over the ice on one foot, and occasionally giving a postman's knock upon it with the other. It was a good long slide, and there was something in the motion which Mr. Pickwick, who was very cold with standing still, could not help envying. It looks a nice warm exercise that, doesn't it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he inquired of Wardle, when that gentleman was thoroughly out of breath, by reason of the indefatigable manner in which he had converted his legs into a pair of compasses, and drawn complicated problems on the ice. Ah, it does, indeed, apostrophe, replied Wardle. Do you slide? Apostrophe, I used to do so, on the gutters, when I was a boy, apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick. Try it now, apostrophe, said Wardle. Oh, do please, Mr. Pickwick. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried all the ladies. I should be very happy to afford you any amusement, apostrophe, replied Mr. Pickwick, but I haven't done such a thing these 30 years. Apostrophe, pooh, pooh, nonsense. apostrophe said Wardle, dragging off his skates with the impetuosity which characterized all his proceedings. Here, I'll keep you company, come along. Apostrophe apostrophe and away went the good-tempered old fellow down the slide, with a rapidity which came very close upon Mr. Weller, and beat the fat boy all to nothing. Mr. Pickwick paused, considered, pulled off his gloves, and put them in his hat, took two or three short runs, bulked himself as often, and at last took another run, and went slowly and gravely down the slide, with his feet about a yard and a quarter apart, amidst the gratified shouts of all the spectators. Keep the pot a bilin, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe said Sam, and down went Wardle again, and then Mr. Pickwick, and then Sam, and then Mr. Winkle, and then Mr. Bob Sawyer, and then the fat boy, and then Mr. Snodgrass, following closely upon each other's heels, and running after each other with as much eagerness, as if their future prospects in life depended on their expedition. It was the most intensely interesting thing to observe the manner in which Mr. Pickwick performed his share in the ceremony, to watch the torture of anxiety with which he viewed the person behind, gaining upon him at the imminent hazard of tripping him up, to see him gradually expend the painful force he had put on at first, and turn slowly round on the slide, with his face towards the point from which he had started, to contemplate the playful smile which mantled on his face, when he had accomplished the distance, and the eagerness with which he turned round, when he had done so, and ran after his predecessor, his black gaiters tripping pleasantly through the snow, and his eyes beaming cheerfulness and gladness through his spectacles. And when he was knocked down, which happened upon the average every third round, it was the most invigorating sight that can possibly be imagined, to behold him gather up his hat, gloves, and handkerchief, with a glowing countenance, and resume his station in the rank, with an ardor and enthusiasm that nothing could abate. The sport was at its height, the sliding was at the quickest, the laughter was at the loudest, when a sharp, smart crack was heard. There was a quick rush towards the bank, a wild scream from the ladies, and a shout from Mr. Tubman. A large mass of ice disappeared. The water bubbled up over it. Mr. Pickwick's hat, gloves, and handkerchief were floating on the surface, and this was all of Mr. Pickwick that anybody could see. Dismay and anguish were depicted on every countenance. The males turned pale, and the females fainted. Mr. Snodgrass and Mr. Winkle grasped each other by the hand, and gazed at the spot where their leader had gone down, with frenzied eagerness, while Mr. Tubman, by way of rendering the promptest assistance, and at the same time conveying to any persons who might be within hearing the clearest possible notion of the catastrophe, ran off across the country at his utmost speed, screaming fire, apostrophe apostrophe with all his might. It was at this moment, when old Wardle and Sam Weller were approaching the hole with cautious steps, and Mr. Benjamin Allen was holding a hurried consultation with Mr. Bob Sawyer on the advisability of bleeding the company generally, as an improving little bit of professional practice. It was at this very moment that a face, head, and shoulders emerged from beneath the water, and disclosed the features and spectacles of Mr. Pickwick. Keep yourself up for an instant, for only one instant. Apostrophe apostrophe bawled Mr. Snodgrass. Yes, do. Let me implore you for my sake. Apostrophe apostrophe roared Mr. Winkle, deeply affected. The adjuration was rather unnecessary, the probability being that if Mr. Pickwick had declined to keep himself up for anybody else's sake, it would have occurred to him that he might as well do so for his own. Do you feel the bottom there, old fellow? Apostrophe apostrophe said Wardle. Yes, certainly, apostrophe replied Mr. Pickwick, wringing the water from his head and face, and gasping for breath. I fell upon my back. I couldn't get on my feet at first. Apostrophe, the clay upon so much of Mr. Pickwick's coat as was yet visible, bore testimony to the accuracy of this statement, and as the fears of the spectators were still further relieved by the fat boy suddenly recollecting that the water was nowhere more than 5 feet deep, prodigies of valor were performed to get him out. After a vast quantity of splashing, and cracking, and struggling, Mr. Pickwick was at length fairly extricated from his unpleasant position, and once more stood on dry land. "Oh, he'll catch his death of cold," apostrophe said Emily. "Dear old thing," apostrophe said Arabella. "Let me wrap this shawl round you, Mr. Pickwick." Apostrophe, "Ah, that's the best thing you can do," apostrophe said Wardle, "and when you've got it on, run home as fast as your legs can carry you, and jump into bed directly." Apostrophe, a dozen shawls were offered on the instant. Three or four of the thickest having been selected, Mr. Pickwick was wrapped up, and started off, under the guidance of Mr. Weller, presenting the singular phenomenon of an elderly gentleman, dripping wet, and without a hat, with his arms bound down to his sides, skimming over the ground, without any clearly defined purpose, at the rate of 6 good English miles an hour. But Mr. Pickwick cared not for appearances in such an extreme case, and urged on by Sam Weller, he kept at the very top of his speed until he reached the door of Manor Farm, where Mr. Tubman had arrived some 5 minutes before, and had frightened the old lady into palpitations of the heart, by impressing her with the unalterable conviction that the kitchen chimney was on fire, a calamity which always presented itself in glowing colors to the old lady's mind, when anybody about her evinced the smallest agitation. Mr. Pickwick paused not an instant until he was snug in bed. Sam Weller lighted a blazing fire in the room, and took up his dinner. A bowl of punch was carried up afterwards, and a grand carouse held in honor of his safety. Old Wardle would not hear of his rising, so they made the bed the chair, and Mr. Pickwick presided. A second and a third bowl were ordered in, and when Mr. Pickwick awoke next morning, there was not a symptom of rheumatism about him, which proves, as Mr. Bob Sawyer very justly observed, that there is nothing like hot punch in such cases, and that if ever hot punch did fail to act as a preventive, it was merely because the patient fell into the vulgar error of not taking enough of it. The jovial party broke up next morning. Breakings up are capital things in our school days, but in afterlife they are painful enough. Death, self-interest, and fortune's changes are every day breaking up many a happy group, and scattering them far and wide, and the boys and girls never come back again. We do not mean to say that it was exactly the case in this particular instance. All we wish to inform the reader is that the different members of the party dispersed to their several homes, that Mr. Pickwick and his friends once more took their seats on the top of the Muggleton coach, and that Arabella Allen repaired to her place of destination, wherever it might have been we dare say Mr. Winkle knew, but we confess we don't, under the care and guardianship of her brother Benjamin, and his most intimate and particular friend, Mr. Bob Sawyer. Before they separated, however, that gentleman and Mr. Benjamin Allen drew Mr. Pickwick aside with an air of some mystery, and Mr. Bob Sawyer, thrusting his forefinger between two of Mr. Pickwick's ribs, and thereby displaying his native drollery, and his knowledge of the anatomy of the human frame, at one and the same time, inquired, "I say, old boy, where do you hang out?" ... Mr. Pickwick replied that he was at present suspended at the George and Vulture. "I wish you'd come and see me," ... said Bob Sawyer. "Nothing would give me greater pleasure," ... replied Mr. Pickwick. "There's my lodgings," ... said Mr. Bob Sawyer, producing a card. "Lant Street, Borough, it's near Guy's, and handy for me, you know. Little distance after you've passed St. George's Church turns out of the High Street on the right-hand side the way." ... "I shall find it," ... said Mr. Pickwick. "Come on Thursday fortnight, and bring the other chaps with you," ... said Mr. Bob Sawyer. "I'm going to have a few medical fellows that night. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick expressed the pleasure it would afford him to meet the medical fellows, and after Mr. Bob Sawyer had informed him that he meant to be very cozy, and that his friend Ben was to be one of the party, they shook hands and separated. We feel that in this place we lay ourselves open to the inquiry, whether Mr. Winkle was whispering, during this brief conversation, to Arabella Allen, and if so, what he said, and furthermore, whether Mr. Snodgrass was conversing apart with Emily Wardle, and if so, what he said. To this, we reply, that whatever they might have said to the ladies, they said nothing at all to Mr. Pickwick or Mr. Tupman for 8 and 20 miles, and that they sighed very often, refused ale and brandy, and looked gloomy. If our observant lady readers can deduce any satisfactory inferences from these facts, we beg them by all means to do so. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.